Short disclaimer. This podcast is in no way affiliated with the Stars production or Diana Gabaldon. All views expressed are solely our own. Welcome to the Outlander podcast,
where the men are kilted,
the women are winsome,
and the whiskey is neat.
Welcome to episode 143 of the Outlander podcast. I'm Ginger.
And I'm Summer, and we are in love with all things Outlander.
So before we get to our feedback for episode 204, before I hit record, I just asked Summer to please put the porno down.
Look,
because she's getting got all kinds of interesting followers. And if you're a follower of that, one of those followers of hers, and you listen to our show, first of all, thank you for listening.
Right.
But I
guarantee you they don't listen to our show.
I don't think they do. Summer's got full on porno people, pornos following her.
Like, it wasn't even like their profile pic was innocuous. And then
I get profile pics with.
I know you do.
With V got before,
but that's
previously with V in, no, D and V.
But that's not nearly sneaky enough.
I know, because, that's true. That's
because
true.
I got an innocuous follow from somebody, and I like to follow people back because I'm interested.
No, because she wants to watch their videos.
No. But I always check. I always look at their profile before I follow back. I'm like,
and
pull
look
it
at
up
some
and
of
make
tweets,
sure,
just
and I make sure they're real, because sometimes they're bots and they're like, get 3,000 followers if you follow me. So I looked at it, and I went to look at this particular one, and it was their feed was full of literal porn, like. Porn, like just shots.
That's of a new follower.
Oh yeah, that happened today. Okay. I'm not following you back. I'm sorry.
Did you block them?
No, I didn't do that because I want to keep their follow on my. Want to keep the numbers, but I'm not gonna follow them back.
Okay, that's the difference between Summer and I. On Pod, I don't look at every single follower, but on my personal account, dang straight. If it's like a bot or whatever, then I won't block them. If it's a porno thing, believe me, I used to get a ton of those, and it was probably because of my screen name, which I won't. Go into
well,
but it was German, it was not porn.
No, but in Filipino, didn't it mean like
not Filipino.
Vagina? Am I wrong?
No, it wasn't Filipino, it was I think it was Indonesian. I looked it up. My name used to be Tante Ingva, which means aunt Ginger
in
I,
German.
I was in, yes,
not Indonesian,
not Indonesian, but Tante, or in French, it's Tante, right? So I'm not saying it's French or German, but apparently Tante or something like that means like. Woman, or maybe not mother, but like sister, or but definitely a female person, a female figure. And it was ridiculous. I got so much V, so much D, so much V in D. I mean, you can't do that. D in V. I didn't get the videos though, which I'm glad for, but
that's
holy crap. So anyway, but the difference is I saw them like, okay, dude, free country, free world, whatever. But I blocked their booties and I tried to report them. That's just me. I don't want those people following me, but at least block them, if not reported them. But Summer's like, no, I must grow my followers.
I'm not going to follow them back.
I'm not going to DM them.
Okay, here's what happened.
You could at least mute them.
Let me tell you. Ginger.
Oh, you're not following
them. I'm not following
them.
All right, here's the thing.
Oh, Lord.
I've been riding the cusp of 1,500 for probably a few weeks now. And I was over 1,500 for about a week. And then randomly over the weekend, I got a massive unfollow of like 12 people, which dumped me back down into the 1,400s.
You got a massive unfollow?
Yeah, like 12.
Oh, that's not I thought you meant like 100.
Okay, usually an unfollow is because I follow it. I'm so into it. Anyway, but usually an unfollow, I'll get like one or two at a time. And so I follow them. And then if they unfollow me, I unfollow them back. That's just how I go. But I randomly, and they must have been accounts that were handled by the same person, but there were 12. I had 12 unfollows yesterday in one day. And I was like, that's really big. But it took me down from being just over 1,500 to under 1,500. So I'm like, I just want to be back over 1,500.
Okay, just so you can hear it and maybe appreciate the meta, or later on you'll appreciate the meta of this. I just tweeted, we promised our next show opens like none other we've ever had. And hopefully like none other we will ever have. I promise you. I apologize for bringing it up. It was just too funny. Before I hit record, she's like, look at this. I'm like, what? Summer!
I did make her look at it.
I did make her look at it. I
don't
need to see that stuff.
Right in her face.
So can we get to the actual feedback now?
Oh, feedback. Okay, I'm ready.
Okay, so first up is our dear friend,
Candida. Dang, that's a long list.
It's like,
good job, you guys. There's a lot more. Wow.
So I was like, oh my gosh, people actually called. And this is, we got some tweets, and of course we've gotten comments on Facebook, and we've gotten some emails, but we really want to, for at least the episode discussions, push the voice, because that way you guys are truly, it's your voices, not just your opinions, so metaphoric voices, but literally your voices. And we really appreciate those who can send them in. Again, through our website, which is a SpeakPipe little pop-up, or via our Skype number at 916-604-4777. So first up is our friend Candida.
Hello, Summer. Hello, Ginger. This is Candida from Pasadena. I just finished watching episode 204, La Dame Blanche, and I wanted to know what your reaction is to the scene between Jamie and Claire when she tells him Black Jack Randall is still alive. In the novel, he runs into him face to face, and it's very shocking for him and for us. I was hoping to see some version of that in this episode, perhaps even have him walk in, crash, really, their dinner party. I would have loved that, but they went a different way. So let me know what you guys think.
Oh my God, for real, if he'd crashed the dinner party, I would have been on my feet.
Who would crashed?
If BJR.
Oh my gosh, that would have, if they had taken like that kind of turn, I would have been like, oh, that's jolting or jarring, but
no,
I would have been on my feet,
throwing things at my TV. I would have been like, no. Okay, I mean, adaptation. We have to always push adaptation. This is an adaptation. And they've chosen not to go with that kind of a reveal. It's more of a, hey, by the way, did you know so-and-so is still alive? And then to let that kind of fester as the weeks have gone by. I thought that given that's how they were going, it was kind of a foregone conclusion. It was not going to happen. I mean, he is coming. We all know he's alive. He's coming back, right? I mean, we all watched this week's episode. Jack is back. Hashtag Jack is back.
I'm surprised they didn't do something like that. Black Jack is back. Like
they did
it.
They may, but they're hiding
the hashtag.
They're hiding their hashtag.
They haven't.
I'm going to go with Jack is back. That's what I think it's going
to
be.
So thank you, Candida. Yes. Our reaction to her, the way she told him or that she told him, or just the difference in the show and the books, basically?
I think the reaction of the way they chose to do the reveal.
We said it in our discussion of episode 204. Once they decided not to have the Abby be the Abby of the books, right? And have not all of the healing, but getting over the first hump of the healing. So before they get to France, and they decided to take their time with the PTSD and then have that kind of be
the PTSD, because book that all happened at the Abbey.
Well, and then of course going forward, because he's not, even in DIA, he's not fully healed yet. He's gone through the most of it to get, they've come back together and then it's him healing. But in the show, they haven't come back together, and that's what takes so long. So I think because they're showing that and they haven't been back together, and it was at that point that she reveals that, and that gives him, of course, later on, he goes to the prostitute and comes back to her and says, look, I can feel things again. Let's do this. Since that was kind of used as like a trigger for them to actually kind of come back together, it's an interesting way of doing it. But they didn't necessarily, and I don't know if this is what Candida is saying, they didn't necessarily have to, even without doing the Abbey like the books, they didn't necessarily have to use that as a trigger. They could have had the same thing where he comes face to face with him at Sandringham's palace or whatever. They could have done something like that and still have them kind of had this awkward conversation where she's like, you don't talk to me, and you know, even the baby names and all that. They could have had the exact same thing. He goes to the Madame Elisa's, gets all turned on, comes home and says, oh, I'm still capable. I'm still, you know, I think I'm finally getting to the place where I can talk about, I can do you. I can do this now without having BJR being alive or still being alive, being one of the catalysts. It worked. They could have left it out and still had that meeting happen the way.
I know. I think the only thing that moderately, it doesn't even really bother me, but it's something that was brought up by one of our listeners, Tweetly D, I believe.
Yeah.
She mentioned the fact, I believe it was her.
I love saying Twitter handles out loud.
I know. They're funny. And if it was not her, I have no excuse for that. But saying something about the fact that he's got a child on the way. He has a baby in his wife. Like, there are so many things to live for. And the only thing he's been remotely excited and ecstatic and like life affirming about is the fact that he now has a chance to kill this dude. And the baby is like, oh yeah, and by the way, you're having a baby. That's awesome.
And our next piece of listener feedback, I hope I'm saying your name right. If we're incorrect, please let us know. This is from Ayana.
Hi, this is Ayana from Vallejo, California. And I really love your show, first off. It's like hanging out with my girlfriends and being able to talk about Outlander when I don't have a lot of people in the household that watch it. But anyway, I really enjoyed episode 4. I know a lot of people are hemming and hawing over the fact that it's not exactly like the book. That's what an adaptation is. It's just giving you little bits and pieces from the book. And I'm just thrilled that Outlander is over. So any bit of Outlander that I can get, I'm excited about. My favorite part of episode 4 was the one of the small things that Jamie does, and that's where he, when he meets Alex Randall for the first time, he does that thing where they describe in the book that he shrugs his shoulders as if his shirts are too tight. So when I saw that, I was just excited because it's those little things that, you know, made me excited. And I'm sure the whole bite mark thing is going to be explained in episode 5. But I think overall they did a great job. Again, it's an adaptation. They've told us it's not going to be exactly like the book. And I think if we just put the book down and just enjoy the characters for who they are and those little things get excited about, that's all that matters. And then thanks so much for all that you do. We truly enjoy your podcast and look forward to hearing what you have to say on the upcoming episodes. Take care. Bye.
Okay, I got to say, because this is kind of why I've been tweeting maybe weird, mushy things kind of randomly in the last week or two. You guys blow us away, not just with your voicemail, your feedback, but also we've gotten some of the nicest, most complimentary, just sweet emails. Our listeners are awesome, period, full stop. We typically get good feedback. We get, you know, feedback. We want to hear from you, even if it's something that's critical. We want to hear from you because we want to make our show better. So we do get feedback regularly, but that regularly, in quotes, is maybe a few times a month, maybe, especially email, and when the show's not on. Well, and by that, we mean stars because we're always on.
I know. But what I enjoy about it is with the verbal feedback is that so much is lost in emails and text. Mm-hmm. You don't hear tone. And emotion. Tone means everything. And so to go back and hear the comments with the actual voices, I think is...
You guys hear us all the time. We're boring to ourselves.
She bores me so much.
And Summer does not bore me, but...
It's because I'm quiet.
Excuse me. Since I edit, I hear this at least one time when we literally... record, and then one more time when I edit, and then sometimes a third time if I go back and listen to the episode, which is not always because I don't need 3 or 4 times when we've got a weekly show. Like the last few weeks, I put up 2 or 3 shows a week, which is insane in the membrane.
She's at amazing.
Least in this membrane.
Could we get a tip jar for her? I'm not going to put anything into it myself, Lord. But somebody else should.
You're the one who should, girlfriend. Anyway, this appears, or this seems, that it happened last year, I think, too, or last for part A, part B of the season 1 split. It seems that engagement, and which completely understandable, at the time the show was on TV, people are, our listenership, at least for those episodes, blows up, which we totally get. We totally get. I think our number one listenership episode of anything we've ever had, if you go to our Audio Boom channel, is the wedding episode. And not the read-along, even though that was sweet, but episode 107, the wedding. And so what I'm trying to say is you guys give us feedback. We're not lacking feedback, but you guys like, take it up a notch as far as the amount of feedback and your engagement when the show is on the air. And that makes complete sense because it's what we love. It's what we all love. It's what we want to see, you know, all year long. But we know it takes them a long time to produce this. So just a heartfelt thank you. And I'll try and keep the mushy tweets down. But I promise you, it's not vague booking. It's not vague tweeting. It is me. I'm just not going to say, oh, so-and-so sent us this email, because I don't want to out anyone. And, you know, sometimes people share things with us that are personal and private. And so we would never share those. But you guys are crazy awesome. And we've just had, we were talking a little earlier today about just the opportunities that we've had, people that we've met when you're walking down the street. I know all that.
What?
Just people that we've met and listeners that we've met and people that were other fans like we were. We're still fans that we've met through this, not just through our show, but through being fans of the show. And you guys, it's amazing. I've already probably repeated myself about 12 times now, so I'll stop. But you guys are amazing. And in case we don't say it enough, thank you. Our show is a very selfish thing. we do it because, or at least I do it. I started it. I came to summer with the idea because I wanted to be part of something bigger. And that is a fan, but also someone who does something and not just, you know, enjoys it from home, because I was so full of this love for this series that I just couldn't not be a part of it once it was going to go to this next level, even though it took a year.
And I just couldn't let her do it by herself.
Well, I was afraid to do it by myself. I was like, I don't want to, I need some, I'll like take the lead. I'll do the work. I'll, you know,
she regrets that now.
No, I don't. I mean, sometimes I do, but no, I'll do the most of the production. I just don't want to like do the talking alone. So it always, I think it's helpful to have a co-host.
Well, let's be honest. You'll do the talking alone. You just want somebody sitting next to you while you do it.
Oh, that's true. I need someone to at least fake listen. And summer's good to fake listen.
I'm a fake listener. I bring my phone. My I have a book. I'm good.
Oh, a book? You bring a book too? You have, read while we chat? Oh my goodness. All these things are coming out.
So basically, funny.
So thank you. And we have more listener feedback, and we will get back to Ayana, I promise.
You've talked so much. Let's move on.
It's going. So thank you guys. If you may hear her mushiness on social media, it is 99% of the time going to be Ginger, or 100%?
On the actual pod Twitter?
Yeah.
Oh, it's you. You don't let me touch it.
You touch it. You just tweeted yesterday.
Now, personally, I didn't notice the shrug.
Me either.
But given the fact, I know, so bad. But
we're
given
bad fans.
But given the fact that we know the source material and that they didn't give us the giant reveal of him being shocked by thinking he'd run into BJR when he actually ran into Alex, I think this was the best we were going to get.
Our next listener feedback comes from Deborah.
Hi, this is Deborah Steinhardt from New York. I just wanted to say that there's been so much talk about the costumes, of beautiful, lavish costumes, and I don't want to overlook Master Raymond's. I love his little costume. He's like an alchemist, a wizard. His the clothes are muted in color, yet they have all sorts of little designs or magical symbols on it. I think it's pretty amazing. And the other thing about episode 204 is I loved when all mayhem broke out at the dinner party and Murtaugh comes running in from out of nowhere in full Highlander regalia with his kilt swinging and his knife drawn ready for a fight. I just loved that. I thought that was awesome. And one more thing. I was listening to Rondi Moore's podcast of episode 204 last night. He just posted it. And he just casually mentioned that that we're working on season 3. So I thought that was kind of cool. I know they haven't announced anything yet, but anyway, just thought I'd share. Thanks. Bye.
Thank you, Deborah. That was so sweet. I loved it. Okay, so everyone to jump on.
I'm only going to say this now. To my understanding, yes, they are working on season 3.
They have to be ready because
they
have it
exactly because
when. Hopefully, knock on wood, when it's announced.
Right, because of the tight turnaround of when they would have to start filming and have everything ready. Of course, they're working on season 3.
So my guess is they probably work into their budget that they have to work ahead.
Sure. But in my personal opinion, come on, stars. You gave us season 2 after, like, what, one or two episodes last year? This is dumb. We're, like, on season... Episode... What, 4, 5?
We're talking about 5 tonight.
Exactly. So we're on episode 5 and you still don't give us a season pickup. How could you not pick this garbage up? Come on.
I would have loved to have had it happen yesterday. But in addition to what you heard, Deborah, if you listen to our interview with Tony, although she was very careful not to say or to say that there has not been a season 3, they're not actively breaking down. She said they haven't even broken down episodes yet. There's, you could say, you know, there's some maybe believability in that or not. My guess is even if they haven't, okay, maybe they haven't written, they have to have started the thought process of where to break it down. Because again, if everything is waited until that green light's on, that's way too late.
Do you think they're going to wait till Comic-Con?
The show's done by then. I don't think they're going to wait till the show's done before they announce the next season. Absolutely.
I mean,
not.
I would hope not. I'm just saying, no, I think if they haven't if they haven't announced it now, what are they waiting for?
I cannot answer that, but I don't think they'll wait that long. I think it'll come. It's May 7th now. I think it'll happen in May. The next piece of feedback is from Heather.
Hi, ladies. This is Heather. My thoughts on episode 204. I thought it was an absolutely wonderful episode. They did such a good job adapting this whole section of the book. I was so impressed with Tony Graffia's writing and the direction and everything. It was fantastic. You guys talked about this last week a little bit about Janie's speech. I think Lynae mentioned it. Jamie's speech about the fortress being blown up and how the lean-to was coming back. And I was so glad they put that speech back in the section of the show. It was so necessary and so wonderful, and I'm glad it came back. So this whole episode was wonderful. I have to tell you something funny, though. I was watching early on my iPad in my dining room about 40 feet away from where my kids were playing video games. You know, they couldn't see or hear anything. And the scene where Jamie comes home from the brothel and he jumps on the bed, you know, and his shirt flipped up a little bit. And for some reason, that startled me. It shouldn't have. This is Outlander. But I just exclaimed pretty loudly, "Holy butt cheek." And my son, 7, hears me and says, "Can I see a butt cheek?" And I immediately just scream, "No!" So that was the funniness in my house tonight. But thanks for doing what you do, ladies. And I can't wait to hear the episode. Bye.
Oh my God, legit. That's going to be my new favorite thing. I'm going to say that. Holy butt cheek. I'm going to hear about it. My daughter's going to totally be like, "What? I want to see a butt cheek." If it doesn't happen that way,
that around your daughter.
If it doesn't happen that way, I'm going to be totally sad. Holy butt cheek.
Holy butt cheek is right. When we were listening to that, because when we include it in the episode, it's the cleanest version we have. It's what you guys gave us. But we also play it before we give comments so Summer can hear it. And she totally choked on her drink twice.
She did. Twice. Twice, people.
Very sweet. Heather, that is adorable. Absolutely. Of course, if you listen to our episode or our discussion of episode 204, we are enthralled and in love with Tony and love that the Fortress Blade of Grass speech came back. And as Tony said, surprisingly, it wasn't even necessarily meant for that episode. It was bouncing back and forth a few times. So we're just glad it's there.
No, I want you to know that when they, and this is so weird because I'm a robot, but when I watch the episodes, when they put stuff in that is so quintessential from the books, there is a part of me that gets real verklempt. The first time we saw...
That's the 1% of her that's not robot.
I know. When we first saw Mother Hildegard and she called her Lady Brock Turok, I was like...
that's harsh.
When he started talking about his fortress, I was like... it's almost embarrassing. Granted, I'm home alone when it happens. But had there been people there, I would have been like, "Don't look at me. Don't look," which is why I don't watch the show with other people, because I don't know how I'm going to respond because I don't know what they've written. But that's part of why I don't want to watch it with you, Ginger.
What? There's anybody else in this room? My cat. And she doesn't watch this anyway. So
I'm just saying, I don't want to cry with you. I want to cry alone.
That's why I, who is not the antithesis of robot, I am a robot when on those very rare occasions where we're watching something for the first time among 1,000 other people, like the premiere of season 2. Because we hadn't seen it earlier. And I got a little teary, but I did not cry and I refused. So I pulled out the robot.
Okay, legit, I never cry. I'm not racking, sob, crying. That's not what's happening. My point is I'm affected. I'm affected to the point that I could cry if I let myself go there, but I almost never do because I'm a robot.
Our next listener feedback comes from Karen.
Hello, Ginger and Summer. It's Karen from Pennsylvania calling about episode 204, which was a great episode. Really enjoyed it a lot. The best part, I think, was when we see Claire and Jamie finally connect with each other again. And it feels like it's been a long time coming now, but we finally got that. And I thought it was really well done how they let up from arguing and a misunderstanding and with the bite marks from the book being given to us, and also the speech about the fortress, all that stuff that they threw in from the book was so well put together, and I really enjoyed it. The only thing I felt that was missing was maybe the morning after where Claire asks Jamie, "So tell me about those bite marks." Maybe they could have put that in. I don't know. But I know it was done differently in the book, but I feel like Claire would not have let that one go without an explanation. Also, all the rest of the episode with the characters from France, Mother Hildegard and seeing Monsieur Foray and Claire and Louise's discussion and Fergus and Murtaugh, all that stuff. Fergus he's so good. That little guy is so exactly what I pictured almost in the book, but even better. He's just perfect. And so I thought it was great to see this episode. Can't wait for the next one. Talk to you guys again. Bye.
Oh my gosh. Everything.
I hope you talk to us
again. Can I just say ditto, pull a ghost and say ditto? Because, oh my gosh. The only thing you didn't mention, and I'm sure you just left it out because you forgot, because you mentioned a million things, was Bouton. everything. Mother Hildegard.
I know.
Bouton.
I want to say Fergus, this about Fergus.
Myrta. Everybody.
I want to say this about Fergus. Until they cast this darling little boy as Fergus, I never imagined him as a little curly-mopped sage, which is what they've cast. I'm like, he's in there. He's like,
he's wise beyond his years.
Is.
Well, hey, even Book Fergus is wise beyond his years, but
like, for
an
real.
Unfortunate knowledge.
He's like schooling all the adults in every scene he's in. Every scene, which makes me a little sad because that poor little boy hasn't had a chance to be a little boy, which is what's sad.
The next piece of feedback comes from Lori.
Hi, Ginger and Summer. My name is Lori and I'm calling from Grand Rapids, Michigan. Just wanted to say I love the podcast and have enjoyed all of your read-alongs. Just wanted to touch base with a few thoughts on the episode. First and foremost, Joni did a fantastic job. I think this has been the best episode yet. Very excited that we got that speech that Jamie gave about how he felt being alone and naked under the blade of grass. And I think Summer had said that, you know, Tony had given us something back from that first book, and I was very excited about that. And it's just good to have Jamie back. Can't wait to hear the rest of your discussions and podcasts. Thanks, and big fan. Have a great night. Bye.
We just want Tony back
every
time. If not every week, at the minimum, like after each of our episodes.
I just wanted to show up at least once a season. Well, at least.
Well, we got that.
So far. We're two seasons in.
That is a 100% success rate.
That is, but we've just started. Like, I feel like we're still
so early. Oh, no, we have not just started.
In.
As she said, all of your read-alongs, and I said to Summer, I said, oh, all two? And Summer's like, yeah, but it was like, I know, like, it was like 500 years. I mean, gracious. We're not complaining because
it's been
as one of my favorite podcasters says, amazing.
I like to say amazing.
Oh, okay.
Amazing.
I'll stick with mine. Amazing. And I got that from Jessica Kupferman from She Podcast.
This is from me where I say amazing.
Okay, very good.
Anyway, I will say, crazy girl, that Toni Graffia is literally one of my favorite writers of the show. Like, she has to be upper echelon of the writers of the show for me. That being said, Mr. Richard, Kayan, I can't. He's
okay for your first episode. Whoa, out of the park.
Thank you.
Holy Hello Kitty.
Oh my God.
Holy Hello Kitty. Richard, oh my gosh.
I mean, you've been
again.
Hiding.
Hold on. I'm going to do it again. Amazing.
Amazing. Anyway, he is an actor. He was on a show that I watched, the 4400. Anyway, my point is that with his background as an actor and now, but he's also been a writer this whole time, but he wasn't a writer's assistant leading up to this, that now that his episode has aired, I'm like, dude, why are they hiding you? You need to like write more. This was amazing. I thought he did a really great job this week, and we'll talk more about that as we discuss it.
Our next listener feedback comes from Lindsay.
Hi, Summer and Ginger. This is Lindsay calling from Cincinnati, Ohio. I just put my two wee ones to bed and here I am sipping on whiskey and thought I'd give you guys a call. And let me just say, Ginger, how much I enjoyed your Jared's jingle that you shared with us way back in episode 2 of season 2. And I must say that every time I hear you refer to Jared's, I just expect that jingle to be sung. It just tickles me so much when I think of you singing that. But Summer, you're probably thinking I shouldn't encourage her. So I digress. So I wanted to just share my thoughts in regards to your comment, Ginger. You described this scene with Jamie and Claire, the one in which he comes back from the brothel with his bite, as devastating. And I too agree with you. It's quite a devastating scene. And the thing to me that stuck out kind of the most in that was when Claire very emotionally said to Jamie that she feels alone. She feels alone in her pregnancy. And she describes them not even having talked about the baby names until they were with DuVernay. And she's like, that's the only time we've talked about it. We brought it up at that stupid chess game. And just hearing that emotion from her and just really, really broke my heart. It really was conveyed, I feel like, in her describing just how they haven't been able to kind of connect to talk about their baby and let alone talk about what they want to name their baby in their own private way. And when Toni Graffia, in her interview with you guys talked about the way in which kind of the writers kind of approach adapting Diana's great work, and how they talk about when they write new material, they try and write the new material that really still is in line with the flavor and the feel of Outlander. And I think the way in which Tony Garcia like brought in elements from season one with, you know, Jamie's conversation, his under the grass speech that just breaks your heart when you hear it. And then the way she ties in just talking about, you know, Jamie and Claire talking about they want to name their baby and the story that was done in Dragonfly and Amber, that was a conversation they had. But that was a between just Jamie and Claire, and it was intimate, and they were connected in the text of Dragonfly and Amber when they were talking about what they wanted to name their baby. But here, you did get a sense when they were talking about baby names during the chess game that they were not connected. There was a strain. And so I think it was just really well done in the writing of this episode to bring up not new material necessarily, but to bring in material that was in different parts and of DIA and Outlander, and to really bring that forth and make it work in a way that to just show that the just devastating disconnect with Jamie and Claire. I guess I just really want to thank you guys for all that you do in this podcast. And I'm a new viewer to the show. I'm a new book reader. I just got into the Outlander world viewing the show and reading back in December, back at this Christmas. And so to listen to your podcast, I feel connected with the community, and it's truly wonderful. And I just so appreciate everything that you guys are doing. So thanks again. And I look forward to many more podcasts. Take care, Ginger and Summer. Bye.
Thank you. That was very kind. Thank you for your kind words. It means a lot to us.
I take for granted how nice it is to have somebody who lives literally hundreds of feet away from me be in love with the show as much as I am. I can't imagine an existence in which I live in a town where none of my friends like this.
That's actually something that we've gotten a lot almost since day one, huh? About it being kind of, especially with the reading the book, right? It being like a book club of your gal pals or some good friends that can that you can join and talk about some of your favorite books. So we definitely have gotten that, and we completely understand. And I will echo what Summer said in that I couldn't imagine not having someone, at least one person, to speak with about this, to chat with. So Summer and I have always had each other because, again, she read the books first, or she introduced me to them. And so I could always talk to her about them for, like, what, 10 years or so? And then fast forward X number of years when the show was announced and we started our podcast, and there were already so many blogs out there, which are so many wonderful blogs doing what they're doing and what they're still doing now. So there was already a community outside of ourselves and outside of Ladies of Lallybroch, which I had been intermittently been on the message boards since the late 90s. You know, I absolutely take it for granted that I've always had at least Summer. I've always had people that I've connected with online and then met a few personally or in person. And then, of course, once the show was announced and we did our show, it's just been this crazy gift that, yes, we work hard for, but we get so much back. We get your guys' love, we get fan love, we get listener appreciation, and, you know, great relationships with, I mean, so many people, so many entities. It's really blown our mind. So we completely can appreciate what you're saying, Lindsay. I could not imagine not having friends, or at least someone somewhat close to me, at least in the same town or so. So we hope that you'll continue to listen, and we thank you so much for your kind words, and we hope that you'll consider us two of your girlfriends who are at least virtually right next door. And then there's the jingle that will not die.
Oh my God. Like, I live in fear. I literally live in fear.
I haven't said it since that episode.
No, but my fear is that it will be said. Like, there's butt clenching involved.
Oh, wow. That's
like, that's every Ginger. Every time you say Jared, I think it's coming.
So there's Jared. So, but we're glad that you, somehow it struck a chord with you, and that, I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing. You seem to not be put off by it, but you, but you liked the funniness of it, or the funness of it, we hope. And then, so much of 204 was, as I said, part of it was devastating, them not coming together, at least until that point. But, it was Tony Grapp, all the credit goes, well, it's a team effort, but for that episode, yes, much of the credit must go to. Tony Graffia and, of course, director Douglas McKinnon. Our final listener feedback comes from Michael. We got one dude. Yay!
Howdy, Ginger and Summer. This is Michael from Shawnee, Kansas. Here are my comments after listening to your latest podcast covering Outlander, episode 204. First of all, as much as I enjoyed this episode of Outlander, I feel a bit oversatiated. There were so many plot points and revelations in what seemed like rapid succession, I felt like I didn't have time to breathe. During my second viewing of 204, a thought popped in my head when Claire was tossing the bones onto the zebra skin. Yahtzee. Secondly, while listening to your podcast, I burst out giggling when Summer was describing Louisa's frayed ribbons and observed Louisa's comments, "I'm afraid not." Later on in your podcast, I totally agree with Summer about the segue from Murtaugh hitting the gourd with the dagger to the screaming man. However, I will disagree with the conclusion about Mother Hildegard's compliment to Claire being backhanded. Mother Hildegard says, "Still, the bulk of our physicians are better than nothing. You, madame, are a great deal better than nothing." Mother Hildegard is clearly telling Claire that she is better than most of the other doctors. Thirdly, while reading the later books of Outlander, I discovered how much historical detail Diana puts into her novels, so here is this episode's history lesson. Charles Edward Stuart did have an affair with his cousin Marie-Louise de la Tour de Vigny, the wife of Jules de Rohan. That resulted in a pregnancy. However, this affair did not happen until 1747 after the failed rising. Louise gave birth to a son who died at the age of 5 months. Thank you, and I look forward to your next podcast.
I guess the first thing I need to say is that, in general, most of my snarky comments are meant maybe partially in jest. So when I riff on about Mother Hildegard's statement about being less than nothing, being kind of a backhanded compliment, it's partially true. I think that she could have had a better compliment, but it was still a compliment, and I see that. But at the same time, there's part of me that was trying to make a joke out of it. So
points well taken, Michael. Thank you so much. And we love hearing from you and all of our listeners that call in. And we hope to hear from you guys again for feedback for 205, as well as this episode you're listening to right now, our discussion of 205. One more time, and we'll give the number again at the end, 916-604-4777. Okay, Summer, it's time to go into our discussion of 205.
Yes, 205. All right, so what I'm going to say about this episode before we even get into it is that I started to take notes and I had a really hard time because I was so engrossed in the episode that I was not taking notes. And I watched it at least twice. And I say at least because there was so much going on that I kept watching it and getting engrossed that I could not take notes.
And the only words, because we do not talk about it before we sit down and come here to record, but the only words that Summer said to me about this episode, because as usual, she watched it before me, was, "You're going to like it."
Oh, for sure. I knew you were going to love it. Why did you think I said that?
Well, at first I just thought you were trying to tell me you're going to like it. I'm like, yeah. But then when I realized what it was called, what chapter or part of the book it was referring to, I thought, BJR.
Oh, for sure. Like the minute I watched this episode, I was like,
Ginger!
Her fave is there. I didn't do that.
No, but she's like, "This is going to be Ginger."
No, I don't sing that. I don't sing that in my head.
You don't sing anything.
I do. I sing lots of things, but I did not sing that in my head.
You don't sing your words.
Not in the podcast, for sure.
So on to 205. Discussion of 205.
This episode title was actually a chapter title, chapter 21.
In Dragonfly Number.
In DIA.
The opening title for this episode is... We see a horse and some grooms grooming down these horses. And my first thought was, oh my gosh, it's the Royal Stud. Not quite.
It is, but it isn't.
It's a stand-in for it.
Yeah.
I wrote literally stand-in for the Royal Stud. So they even brought in the chapter with the trip to Argentan, which this is probably not. It's Versailles, all right? This is Versailles.
For sure.
So the episode proper opens at Jared's in Paris. Now the aftermath we see with the VO... We see the aftermath of the Benny Hill brawl from the end of last episode. Claire's voiceover mentions, quote, "each annoying tick," unquote, of the clock. And I thought, that's so funny, because Tony said they did not do it on purpose, but here we have in 204, like, tons of clocks, and here now, reference to a clock.
For sure, but I will point out that chapter 19, entitled "An Oath is Sworn," starts.
Okay, hold on a second. When Summer starts bringing out chapter titles, I know she actually prepared.
I did, for sure. Get ready. Here it comes. Uh-oh. I had my book next to me. Okay.
And she had a lot more time than I did.
A little bit. Chapter 19, An Oath is Sworn. The whole thing starts with Claire speaking of an annoying clock that won't stop ticking.
Dude,
and
Richard,
I know that you have and me. I talked about the physicality of her stopping a clock. Because she in the book, she walks over and stops the clock because she can't stand listening to it tick anymore. And we talked about in different time periods about the importance of when you stop clocks. And in, I think, Victorian times, when somebody dies, they stopped a clock in the house. Everything stopped. They would cover mirrors. They would stop clocks. And they left this. This was something that was in the book that, again, we talked about on our podcast and we did the read-along that they also kind of left in the series. She did not physically stop it, but she did talk about being annoyed by the clock, which I thought was enough of an allusion to chapter 19 that I was satisfied. She's smiling.
You get after me and then you for doing it and then you say things like this to me and expect me potentially not to do it. And when you give me something like that, I gotta do it. I will never be satisfied.
Okay. Dude!
What?
That was out of the blue? A step too far. I have a Hamilton reference later coming.
Shut up. Oh my gosh. I wrote, seriously, okay, we both have Hamilton to the max on the brain. It was just nominated for 16 Tonys, which is a record.
I did just get my copy of the Hamilton.
Goodness, she did. And I have another little pod crush on the Hamilcast, which Summer has not started listening to yet, which she'll have to. They're going through the Chernobyl's book, chapter by chapter, and the Hamilton. So,
like, legit, I just finished that book. I need to not be in it anymore.
Chernobyl?
Yeah, I just finished that. Like, it took me 6 months to finish that book because it was audiobook and all.
Oh, yeah.
And I just, and then
isn't
I spent.
Isn't it great, though?
It's amazing.
And he writes like an entertaining historian.
Was super. Okay, this is so off topic.
This is so off topic.
He's super entertaining. It was like, it was the only biography I've ever read that felt like a novel.
Oh, yeah.
I don't like biographies.
Summer's not a, she's a reader.
I don't
of
like
fiction,
nonfiction.
Typically.
I don't really like nonfiction, but this was amazing.
You mean amazing?
Amazing.
Okay, good. As Summer said, apparently we both have Hamilton references coming up. What were you saying about being satisfied that drove me on to saying that?
I have no.
It was the last word you said, something about. You were satisfied when you saw something? Oh,
Of the clocks, because in the beginning of that chapter, she speaks about the clocks and she walks over and stops the clock because she can't stand listening to it. Mm. She removes or stops the counter.
I think she removes
the counterweight and makes it stop. And we had a conversation about in Victorian times or whenever times it was that you would
Summer
stop the
and
clock.
I never had a conversation in Victorian times because we were neither here nor there.
Stop
no,
it.
We definitely weren't there. We were here.
For sure. But my point is that there was, like, when there's a death, when something happens, the clock, people stop the clocks to, like, mark the time and be like, this
Absolutely.
Is when things end. And in the books, I believe we equated it to the end of that moment in France where they were safe and moving on and doing their own thing. And the moment when the past came in to take over, she stopped the clock because there was a death. It was a death. Not like, you know, a physical death, but
not a body.
Yeah, that's all I was going for.
So everyone, we find out, at least every male, except for Fergus, was arrested. Or many people were arrested after the party. So Jamie comes home from the Bastille and Claire and Fergus are on the sofa waiting. And it's so sweet to see him.
Can I say that when I first saw that, I thought it was like Mary.
And on then the sofa?
For sure, because I didn't see anything but like the top of the head. And then when she was like, right. And then when they like kind of panned around, I was like, oh no, it's Fergus. And then I said, oh, wee lamb.
It looks like I wrote, it's a wee family there with a heart. And then when Jamie sees him, he says, come on, laddie, you did well guarding your mistress. And I wrote, can't go forward, but it's all in my heart when I say this. Oh, Fergus, dear, sweet Fergus. This is Fergus's role. Jamie gives him a job. He's to watch his mistress and help and support her, but mostly to help guard her. Jamie tells how they were released. Alex still imprisoned. Only Mary will be able to get him released. Now, Sandringham won't help Alex at all. Not only will he not help him, he sent a messenger with a note that formally released him from his service while the dude was still in the Bastille. I mean, come on. That's harsh.
That's a dick move.
Duke in a box.
He's legit not even a duke anymore. He's a
Jamie asks if she remembers anything from the attack. And Claire tells him, well, they wore fine clothes and shoes. They spoke French like aristocrats. Oh, God.
Aristocrats? Meow.
I thought when I wrote it last night, I better make sure I have the R in there because that would be funny. And then I even wrote aristocrats.
You're fired.
But I just said aristocrats. Oh, Lord. And I haven't even seen that movie. They wore fine clothes and shoes and spoke French like aristocrats. And they freaked out when someone named her as La Dame Blanche.
That's true.
Now, Jamie comes clean. To protect his virtue, he said he was married to La Dame Blanche. Claire is still very sensitive about Crane's mirror. She's like, seriously? You would joke about this after all everything that happened at Crane's mirror? Now, this, dear listener slash show watcher, this is a theme. I'm not saying it's a theme right now, but this is a Claire theme since Crane's mirror, now into this book. She is for, and there are 10, well, sorry, there are currently 8 books, number 9 coming out, probably next year, we hope. This never dies. She is forever sensitive about Crane's mirror.
She is. However, can we speak about the fact that in the book, because if we are book readers as well as show watchers, in the book, she actually chuckles when he mentions this whole thing, and he says, and she mentions the fact that she thinks that it's amazing that he did this because it saved her from being raped. She's actually kind of like patting him on the back in the books about this whole thing. It's not just that she's upset that he might or might not get her burned as a witch, because clearly in France that is not an issue, but she is actually ecstatic and cheerful about the fact that he has saved her from being raped because he called her La Dame Blanche. And she's not nearly thankful enough in this series to the fact that he did that.
So the next scene I wrote, are they at the docks? This is Jared's wine storage place. That's not the docks, right?
No.
The docks is where things come in.
Correct.
So I don't think we ever got an outside shot of whatever this building is. And if we did, I completely missed it. And I apologize. Wherever Jared's place of business is. So it's Jamie and Myrta. They're talking shop. Myrta has learned that there is a gang of masked men called Les Disciples. Now, book readers will know that this is short for Les Disciples du Mal. Now, Les Disciples literally can be translated as disciples, but, you know, there may be some other non-literal translations. But the literal translation of Les Disciples du Mal, as the gang is called in the book, is the disciples of evil, basically those who follow evil. So there's that. So I'm hoping, well, they raped a young woman and were about to attack. They attacked Claire. We're about to probably rape or worse with her. So I think it's not a spoiler to give them the rest of the name of that gang, right? To add the evil part, because come on,
yeah.
What they did was crap. So these people prowl the streets in search of prey. Now, the way into this gang, Myrta says, is a maidenhead. So this
was
kind
gross.
Of
ex- like, that
it was
made
gross.
Me feel real gross.
Absolutely. But it kind of explains now, in case you forgot, because apparently I forgot, it kind of explains the fascination or the joy that one attacker had when he non-scientifically groped or fingered or whatever Mary Hawkins and said, "A vierge, I have a vierge." And the way into this gang, as I said, was a maidenhead. And he said they wore fine clothes. So this seems to line up with Claire's story thus far. Myrta also tells Jamie that he is ashamed that he's failed him. And Jamie tells him, "You did not fail me. You are outnumbered." But he is to keep after Saint-Germain. And he kind of gives him a talking to, kind of gives him like a pep talk. Next scene, we're at Silas Hawkins' place.
And that's straight from the book, before we go any further. That whole scene with Jamie and Myrta is straight from the book, where Myrta feels he emasculated himself and Jamie by not being able to protect.
Let's talk about some funny stuff. In the book, they're going down this alley because, well, similar circumstances to the show. They're going down this alley and there are shops, or there's like at least a shop that has like a, not tent makers, but some canvas linen or whatever makers. And I think this guy was attacked as well before they got there. But basically, they're attacked. Myrta's attacked first because he's the lead. You know, he's like the male who is there, the fully grown male. He's attacked. And then he's put into a sack. Remember that? He's put into a sack. And then when everything's done and La Dame Blanche is named and then people freak out and run away, they go over. By this time, Myrta is coming too, and there's this sack that is like moving around. So it was very funny. It was just a funny picture. So the next scene is in Silas Hawkins' place, and Mary is writing her version of events of the attack to help free Alex. She's the only one who can do so. And Claire comes to visit. She tells Mary that she got in by telling Mary's aunt that she was there to medically examine her.
She looked real rough. Before, it looked like she had smeared lipstick. But when I went back and watched it again, I was like, now it just looks like she had, like, the smeared lipstick thought that I had from the previous episode clearly fed into she had her face beat up.
Mary's ashamed. And she says to Claire that she'll have to leave Paris once she's recovered. This is as per her uncle. And Claire says she will deliver Mary's letter for her. Mary's in love, we learn. Again, we already knew this, or we're reminded of this. And tells Claire that they will marry, she and Alex. Now, Claire, starting or getting ready to start her medical examination, asks Mary how she's feeling. Meaning physically, medically. But Mary answers about her emotional feelings. She assures her, Claire does, that it wasn't her fault. They are able to find humor in the situation, at least in that Mary won't have to marry the widower Vicomte de Marigny.
Mary won't have to marry. That was fun.
Mary will likely not have a baby, Claire says, since her attacker wasn't able to, quote, finish. Chances definitely go down if you don't finish. I get it. But it's no promise of anything. No guarantee. Mary, I wrote, is so pitiful. It is so sad. And right here, Bear's music is very fitting. It's soft and sad, but it's not interrupting them. It's just kind of hovering beneath them. Sort of like Mary herself. Soft and sad and hovering. There's a slightly louder note after Mary says, quote, we're hoping to be married. And the music becomes more ominous when Claire's voiceover wonders about Alex and Mary versus Mary and BJR. The music is low and supporting. The next scene, we're in Jared's wine place, his place of business. I'm not quite sure what to call it yet. Bonnie Prince comes to visit Jamie. We learn a lot from this visit. And the prince talks a lot.
But he only says mark me once and I was kind of sad.
We learn his investors have shown their true colors. He calls them scoundrels. He mentions that about £10,000 were coming his way. He does say, mark me, James, as Summer
said.
Once. Now, Jamie's face, when he opens the bottle of brandy that the prince basically ordered him to get, it's a very forced smile. That made me laugh. Now, Le Comte Saint-Germain is the new investor slash friend. The prince wants to purchase a shipment of Portuguese Madeira, but he's short of funds and wants a business partner. Enter James. So the prince has secured bank loans to provide half of the money to buy the shipment. Once they sell the wine, he says they'll have a nice profit. Now, Jamie points out that the profit won't be enough for an army, but the prince says it'll be enough to get started with ships, weapons, and men. And this, in turn, will convince Duvalney to sell it to the king that it is a worthy investment. Then they'll go to London, he says, march on London in glory.
I love the prince's speech there, where he literally turns to Jamie and says, do not plague me with workmen's concerns. And I thought to myself, I'm going to start using that on my daughter every time she starts to, like, question me when I ask her to do something around the house. Do not plague me with workmen's concerns.
So Jamie, after this mention of, oh, we'll do this and we'll get the money and then we'll get the investment and then we'll march on London, Jamie shines on, like, good news indeed. That is excellent. Let's do that.
For sure.
There's talk of Saint-Germain as a baddie. He mentions demonic rituals. This is Jamie. And the prince says, poppycock, I don't pay attention to those rumors any more than I do to those about your wife. It's like, aw, snap, prince. And then he says, Jamie gets to sell the wine. So, aw, isn't the prince sweet? He lets Jamie do that. Prince has done his job. He says, now it's up to Saint-Germain and Jamie to discuss the business. The next scene, we're in some gardens. It's not quite Versailles, because that's later, but it's some gardens, probably the same gardens they've been in every time there's a garden scene. Now, Claire and Alex are rendezvousing, and Claire, they're going for a walk, and then they get to a bench and they sit down. Now, Claire attempts to convince Alex to let Mary go. Alex has a really nasty cough. Now, notice they don't show us. They show him looking at the hanky, but they don't show us what's in the hanky. So you can kind of probably walk that line.
I hated this scene.
It was awful.
I hated it.
Not bad writing. It was awful to watch.
I hate that Claire is getting so involved in this. I'm like, this has nothing to do with you. And I'm like, you are butting your nose into things that don't concern you. And her assumption that everything that is going forward, as it is now with her being there, was the way that it went forward without her, is insulting. And I feel really bad for Alex in this scene.
Of course, me too.
Super bad, to the point that I'm like, Claire, stay out. Zip it. Pick a side. You can either wage your one woman war against BJR, or you can wage your war against Alex. Doing both is so insulting. And I have so many things more to say about Claire in this episode that we'll get to. But I feel bad about Alex's cough.
I feel really bad. I feel bad for Alex, period. So Claire is concerned for Mary. I wrote, well, kind of.
And his socks are way too clean to be somebody just released from Bastille.
Well, he must have had clothing elsewhere.
Clearly. He was so clean. Like
then that's why he's so clean.
For him to just to have been released.
Rinse it all off.
Seriously. For him to just to have been released from the Bastille. His socks are so white. His everything white in his outfit is so clean that it was not realistic.
Except for the handkerchief they wouldn't let us see.
Okay.
After the cough.
Yeah.
So I wrote, Claire is concerned for Mary. Well, kind of. That she'll end up a nursemaid to Alex. And she convinces Alex, or tells Alex, that it would be kinder to set her free. And Alex says, yes, that he wants, quote, what's best for Mary. But I wrote, this is so sad because this is not about Mary. This is about Claire.
Seriously.
Well, in Claire's defense, it's about Frank. So I get it, but she is playing all these sides.
But you reach that point where you're like, dude, now it's all about you. It's not even about Frank anymore. I felt like she's not taking anyone else's feelings into consideration. It's literally all about Claire.
Alex says, Mary is fortunate to have a friend as caring as you. I thought, oh, gosh, stop praising Claire because this is making me kind of sad.
No, you're just feeding it.
When she says, quote, Alex and Mary simply could not be. For Frank's sake. Huge, huge, huge Bear McCreary moment. Frank's theme is all over the place right here. Very beautiful and very sad. Da-da-da-da-da-da. That's all I know of it.
Okay.
Then the next scene is Madame Elise's. It's Jamie and Le Comte. Now, there's Jamie. I don't think... Does the Comte really answer to the offer of more women? Jamie's like, no whores, thanks. I'm good.
No, literally neither of them are like... No, thanks.
The Comte, too, is wanting to get things done. But Jamie's like, I want to get to the point and then get away from here because this... Not because the brothel, necessarily, because he does a lot of business there. Or at least his secret business with BPC. But Jamie wants to get to the point so they can leave and he not stay with the Comte. Now, Le Comte says he is not interested in Jamie's personal life at all. And he says, here's how it's going to be. Le Comte will secure the shipment and hold it at his warehouse until Jamie has the buyers. Then and only then is Jamie to contact him, not before.
Dude,
he's basically told.
He's like, F you. I don't care about you. I don't care about your family. I don't care about anything leading up to this. Anything that has to do with business, I'm going to do what I have to do. You don't contact me until we reach that point. Other than that, you're nobody to me. But he was still really sexy.
Oh, he's always that.
Super sexy.
So back at Jarrett's, Claire is reclining and Jamie tells her about Elise's. Claire says they have to find a way to dispose of the shipment before it's sold. If the shipment is sold, the prince will get his money.
And this is in the book. It's coming up.
Now, Jamie jokes, quote, maybe Saint-Germain will do us a favor and bring us another ship with the smallpox. And then you see on Claire's face, uh-oh, she has her thinking cap on. She says there are herbs that can make it appear that smallpox is present, and she'll research it the next day. They're soon due at the royal stables to help the Duke purchase a team of horses. At first I thought the royal stud, but no, it's a stand-in, and I'm just happy that they, again, anything they keep, it's just tiny little bits, even a version of a tiny little bit is just ear, eye, every candy, every type of candy. Jamie surprises Claire with a christening gift for their baby, apostles spoons. They'd been passed down in his family for generations. He'd written to Jenny to have them sent. Now, Claire thinks about being a mom and is worried she won't do it well. She says she knows how to take care of people. She knows how to help someone deliver a baby. But to care for someone long term when they're not ill, that's not her specialty. Jamie says, what you don't can, you'll learn. We'll learn together. I wrote, oh, Jamie.
He's not wrong.
Well, no parent knows before you're a parent.
Thank you. That's all I'm going for.
Yeah. The Jamie and Claire theme is huge here. The next scene, I wrote, Versailles, baby. Jamie and Claire.
I have Versailles with a giant exclamation point, all caps.
Pretty much same thing as I did. Jamie and Claire are at Versailles to help Le Duc select les horses. That didn't work very well.
That was so...
Les chevaux.
The whole thing was a little bit strange for me because... Jamie's there with the Duke to select horses. That being said, he's there, and the first time he looks at horses, he looks at one horse and he says, oh, this is a fine steed, blah, blah, blah. And the Duke is like, oh, let's go buy him. And then like 10 minutes later, he keeps moving, and Jamie says, oh, this is a fine stallion. He goes, I'm going to look at more.
Yeah.
Well, I thought that was weird.
No, we'll come back to that because I noticed that too. So Jamie and Claire are at Versailles, and Jamie is there to help the Duke select horses. Claire, really quickly, after they say their hellos, gets nauseous.
But did she really, or did she just kind of
fake it? That I don't know,
because
the second one is faked.
Twice.
The second one is faked. This one, she actually looked like she could have been nauseous. So Claire is eating fruit from some outdoor little display when Annelise de Marillac finds her.
I hate her.
Le Duc tells Jamie that he thinks the prince is an utter ass. And it looks like Le Duc is trying to suss Jamie out. I mean, it's fine to give him his opinion, but it's almost like he wants Jamie to say something.
Well, I think she's an utter ass for the point that every time she's shown up, she gets upset when somebody likes somebody else more than her. She's like, oh, that so-and-so is looking at you more than he looks at me. I'm a little upset. Like, she seems like she's used to being the center of attention, and she's upset when she's not.
The Duke tells Jamie that he, Jamie, is a good judge of horse flesh, but a poor judge of men. Now, Jamie answers that he sees the prince for what he is, but that his father, meaning James, is the rightful king. Le Duc answers, nobly said. But the look on his face, the whole time Jamie is talking, is more like, I'm watching you, and I'm aware of so much more. He just looks very suspicious. Now, Jamie finds a beautiful horse, and Le Duc loves this beautiful horse, but then he says, he's got to see a few more, as Summer said.
Right, but the first horse he saw, he was totally okay with going with.
Quote, I'm a man who cherishes options, don't you? Unquote. Now remember these words, dear listener. He let a lot of his personhood out just now. Annelise tells Claire that Jamie was more carefree when she knew him, and she says that Claire... Over the whole point of their entire conversation is like basically Claire's turned him into a man.
This was a big pissing contest, it felt to me.
I think Annelise was trying to make it into a contest because she kept saying things and Claire's like, oh, but he is. Because Claire was not trying to one-up anything. Annelise was doing all the pissing.
No, but she was. She was 100% like meeting her toe-to-toe. She was like, when I knew him, he did XYZ. And she was like, well, he still does XYZ, but now he does A. And it was this constant, like, I know him better than you.
I understand what you're saying. I still think Annelise was doing the pissing. I agree with you there. When I knew him, he was like this. And Claire's like, well, no, he's still like that. Claire was agreeing, but disagreeing that he was completely different. But Claire was like, well, no, he still does that. But he did this. Well, no, he still does that. So
she
Claire was
still
like,
participating in the contest.
Well, because she wasn't going to ignore her. Not the contest, in the conversation. I disagree, but I like the observation of the pissing contest.
I feel like Annelise is used to being the prettiest girl in the room, and having other people not notice her first was painful to her, as exampled by when BJR shows up and he's looking at Claire and not her. She's like, he's looking at you and not me.
So Annelise, as Summer said, sees someone looking at Claire. She says, it seems he knows you. He's rather dashing.
No, he knows you was what she made. The statement she made after it was clear that he was looking at her and not her, like at Claire and not Annelise, because it was like, I need a reason why he's looking at you and not me, because I'm clearly.
So he must know you.
Right.
That's why
he must know you, because I'm way prettier than you. That's how it came across to me.
So then I wrote, dun, 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 BJR, Ella.
Dude.
Man. Oh, gosh. You know, I had to do this. Tobias is freaking sexy. The uniform. The wig, I just can't with this man.
I don't care about his wig, but he looked really, really good looking in that uniform.
He looks good looking in Ginger. Everything.
Shh, the wig.
And that's out of everything. Said. Oh.
I'm not a fan of the wig. I'm just saying.
Oh, God. The wig when it was down in 216.
That was
I
gross.
I know that's gross
that
to people.
That was super gross to
I'm
me.
Not talking about what he did or how he did it. I'm just talking about.
I can't move past that.
I'm talking about just the way he looks in the wig and the way he looks with the wig down. That's all I'm saying. Not how he did it. That's
anyway,
gross.
My point is that he looked amazing.
Amazing.
Amazing in his outfit.
Yes. All the yes, all the yes, all the yes. And then he calls her Claire. So he's like first name basis in front of strangers and he's not her husband or a close intimate family member. Oh, the stuff he does with his mouth. Dude, that whatever he's chewing the cud, chewing the cheek, chewing the lip, chewing his tongue.
He didn't
I don't
do
even
as
know.
Much chewing as he did in season one. But I will say that I love the scene with BJR and Claire. So not in the books. This never happened.
No, it's
however,
awesome.
The tension between
awesome.
The two characters with the acting and the tension in the music. It was amazing. I loved the scene.
Even his French does not bother me. I'll overlook everything for that.
I mean,
too.
I have no frame of reference for French.
I have
so
a little bit of frame of reference.
So it clearly didn't bother me.
No. He's still stiff and sore. He had an accident, he says. So Claire turns and tells Annalise she's unwell. She's like, I got to get out of here. Annalise says, oh, I'll go get Jamie. And Claire's like, ah, that's not what
she's
I meant.
Like,
but
no,
now I'm stuck. So BJR asks at this, Jamie, he's here. And the look on his face was, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. Like, it's so hopeful and so
gross.
Like, my best, my most fantastic
Blair.
Dreams just came true. Oh boy. There's a wee smile on his face before he looks off to one side and then back at Claire and whispers, where?
Gross. My favorite part of the scene is when he leans in, he goes, the king. And she's like, fuck the king.
Claire warns him that if Jesus sees him.
Jesus?
Maybe that too. Wow. Claire warns him that if Jamie sees him, he'll kill him. And BJR reminds her that to draw one sword in the presence of the king is punishable by death. And oh my gosh, the look on his face as he smirks, smiles at Claire. Heaven help me. Now he's still the BJR we know and love. Just as he's all swarmy with Jamie and the quote, work of art they created together. He talks to Claire about the fates that brought them all together, etc. He's working that angle with Claire, too. You have to at least respect his commitment. She tries several times to get around him, and he blocks her. And this is the line I was talking about. Quote, Claire, surely you of all people can step outside the passions of the moment and appreciate the sublime preposterousness of a universe that would guide us to a meeting at the French court. I wrote, well, he's got her there.
I mean,
that's a line and a half. Good grief. And you have to look at it. I mean, it's certainly not from the book, but it's if fanfic was ever written, this would have been that fanfic of like what would happen if they actually came face to face at Versailles, like the safest place they could be.
I feel like Richard was writing the scene and sat back and said, the idea of me writing the scene, you have to imagine that if all the worlds collided and XYZ happened, that this would be the result. So I feel this came from a place of
fantasy,
not even fantasy, like a genuine place in the moment of creativity. Like this moment never happened in the books. So for him to have created this space and then to mention all of this, like this heightened sense of knowing in the scene, I thought was really clever. And then enter the king.
And then he grabs Claire as she's trying to pass. She tells him to let go of her, and he says, the king. And she says, F the king.
Which is amazing.
What was that you said, Claire? Oh, that's right. F the king.
Yes.
Got it. Okay, carry on.
She meant it. She just didn't realize she meant it.
Then BJR does the most beautiful / most ridiculous courtly bow ever. And Claire is uber confused.
It all becomes clear when she realizes the king is behind her.
I love the king. I love that.
I love him more in this episode than the last.
Well, because he was pooping.
Because he was not pooping. He was trying to poop. We met him.
So I love the king. Now, Claire introduces BJR to him. We learn, unsurprisingly, that BJR prefers war to politics, where at least you know your enemy. And actually, he has a point there. Because intrigue is much more, maybe not as deadly, but it's much more difficult. and takes much more finesse than being on the battlefield does. It's an interesting speech by the king. When he asks if she and BJR are friends, she says they're acquainted. Now, the king asks if that's a problem for her big warrior of a husband. He mentions his cousin's, quote, rightful place on the throne. Of course, he's referring to James. And then along came Jamie. Ooh.
Okay. Before we get there, I just want to point out that, A, I was super glad the king did not show up on a toilet. Because that was painful. Because
taking a toilet outside takes a lot of handlers.
There's that. That's a whole nother thing to deal with. However, every time the king moved his hands, it looked like he was performing some sort of a magic spell. So I would really love for somebody to go back and make a screenshot of him moving his hands and maybe lightning coming out of them or like some sort of a magic.
Like an animated GIF?
Something. Yes. A GIF where he's moving his hands and making magic happen.
But I didn't do the magic. That would be awesome. Oh my goodness.
I'm just saying he looks like he belongs in Hogwarts because he kept doing like magic movements where he's like, you should stand. And then he's making his hands like, you should stand or you should bow or whatever. But he looked like he came straight out of Hogwarts. It was awesome.
It was awesome. Once Jamie shows up, BJR's face is priceless. If you get past the part that one of these two raped and tortured the other, it's actually funny how they hold this civil conversation with each other. Neither of them looking at each other, but rather Jamie looking at the king and BJR looking at Claire.
No, and then Claire finally literally physically pulls Jamie away from him. Like she's like, no, come here. It was funny. Like the whole thing was really funny.
And then BJR tells the king his reason for being in France. He's there to ask Le Duc to reconsider letting his brother Alex go from his service. The king recommends that he beg. Now, he doesn't really command him to do it then, but he tells him, on your knees. And of course, we've all seen that scene. So that was, I know people are going to disagree with me. Jamie had this big shit-eating grin on his face when he was there on his knees and was very entertained.
I think we all had shit-eating grins on our face.
I felt
bad. For instance, I didn't because I enjoyed every time the king ridiculed BJR.
See, I felt bad. And that's just...
That's because you like Tobias. The rest of us don't care for Tobias enough to not find it humorous when he is belittled as a character because I enjoyed every moment where he was made small by the king.
I did recognize that this is something he had Jamie do. At least in the books, it was referred to as a get on his knees and crawl and to do different things. So I can appreciate that oddness of it. Now, Claire, again, isn't feeling well and asks to leave, and Jamie goes with her. As they walk away, Jamie makes sure she's okay. And then once he finds out that she is, he goes back to chat with BJR. Now, upon the first watching, it's like, man, they seem quite chummy. And BJR, like, puts his hand on Jamie's heart like they're friends. And what was it? Oh, nothing. Just a duel. They battle each other. And seriously, this show gets more Hamilton with each episode because of the duel.
It was real sophisticated that
from a Claire's far distance,
not involved. Yeah, it could have been anything. It could have been a, hey, I like your coat. And then he was like, okay, bye-bye.
In the carriage on the way to Jared's, there's no chatter. They just exchange looks. When they arrive at Jared's, Fergus meets them. And Claire stays back in the carriage and orders the driver to take her to the Bastille. Now, later that night, Myrta and Jamie are discussing the details of the duel. Claire comes in late and says she's just come from the Bastille and BJR has been arrested. She had lied and said that he was part of the party that had attacked them.
Right. So everything that led before that statement, to me, would have been easily explained if they had broken into the 10 Duel Commandments from Hamilton the Musical, where they explained how a duel is worked. Like, I think a lot of people make the assumption that there's two hot-headed dudes that say, meet me on the field and let's kill each other. But there's a lot more that goes into play with regards to a duel. And if you have the moment, you should go and listen to it. If you have Amazon Prime or if you maybe subscribe to iTunes Music, I think it is included in your membership. But if you can listen to the 10 Duel Commandments from Alexander Hamilton, the musical, it's actually quite informative.
So Claire's back and she says they won't hold him for long. And once they let him out, she'll say she was mistaken. She says she needed to buy time for this. She says Jamie needs to think of the baby because if he's caught with the duel or planning the duel, he'll be imprisoned or worse. And then she brings it around to the main point. Jamie can't kill BJR because then there will be no Frank. Now, what she doesn't say in this entire conversation, and I'm not even sure that she says it in the book, is that if there's no Frank, there's no Claire to come back. So she's putting it all on Frank not being born. Now, maybe what she's meaning is without Frank, I can't come back to you, but she doesn't say it. And I think if she had maybe put the emphasis on, if you kill BJR, there's no Frank, and then if there's no Frank, I can't come here and be with you. Not that it would be easier to take, but it would at least put a more Jamie-centric motive on it and not just a Frank-centric. During this conversation, when she says there would be no Frank if BJR is killed, again, the Frank theme comes up. I wrote, time travel can be so confusing. We feel you, Jamie.
This whole conversation was legitimately from the book. But I want you to know that when I read the book, it didn't seem unreasonable. But when I watched the show, the whole thing seemed incredibly unreasonable. Like, I was watching the show totally siding with Jamie. Like, because I know now, having seen everything he went through and the torment that he went through, that it seemed really unreasonable of Claire to ask him to wait and to ask him to not look for vengeance and to ask him to not have that moment to be made whole and to do what he could to be in that place. And it was really hard for me to watch and not be upset with Claire. Like, I watched this whole episode and we reached that last scene, which again, totally reasonable in the book. Like, I was totally on Claire's side in the book, but watching the show, I was really upset at her.
I wonder, especially from what you just said about it coming across as reasonable to you in the book, I wonder how much of this kind of switching sides or having more sympathy or whatever for Jamie, or having more something against Claire for this, for you, was how much, if any, was related to the fact that we get part of the episode where Claire's like not only doing this, which we get from the books, but she's also, which is not in the books, trying to split up Amy and Alex, trying to split up Alex and Mary.
I'm sure that
you were already anti-Claire a little bit.
Yeah.
And I was too.
For sure. I think it was all connected. But honestly, I think a large part of it is the fact that in the books you don't physically see
his reaction.
His reaction and the fact that he was so tormented by BJR in the books. You don't see it like they showed it in the book, in the series. That having seen it in the series, it just made it that much more awful. And then her being like, pick me. Do what I want. Make my issues more important than yours. And I'm sorry you were tormented by this man, but do what I want because I did all of these things for you. And that felt really petty to me. Felt super petty when she was like, I saved your life. I saved your life twice. I'm asking a life for a life. And I thought that was really small of her. And that's just in the way that it played out in the series. In the book, I was totally on her side, for sure. But for whatever reason, in the adaptation, I got real upset.
So Jamie is beside himself, and she asks for 1 year. By then, she says, the baby will be conceived, and she will even help him kill Randall. When she says, quote, you owe me a life, the Jamie and Claire theme comes up, but then it gets a little wonky at the end. So that reflects the fact that they're there together, but they're getting a little uncomfortable. So Jamie kisses the iron of his blade. He promises. That's was done in when you swear an oath, right? That was done in season one. But he wants nothing to do with her. He says, don't touch me. Just get away from me. As the episode ended, is it just me? Or was like the camera angle was like a fishbowl camera angle? It looked kind of distorted and it was high in the corner. If it were an actual four-walled room, it was high in the corner, high in the room in a corner, like opposite of ish where they were standing.
I didn't notice
it was an interesting angle thing. It wasn't a straight normal camera lens that it looked slightly distorted, like it was curved or something. So that was 205.
Good lord, 205. And that as much as I talked, I had so few notes. Like, there was so much going on in that episode that I literally could not take notes because I wanted to watch it both times. All the times I watched it, I wanted to watch it. I could not take time to be snarky and make little comments about it like I would normally do. But I was so involved and invested in what was going on that I just couldn't.
That was 205. And we want to hear from you. What did you think of 205? What did you think of our discussion of 205? Did you agree? Did you disagree? What did we miss? Yeah, let us know what you thought of the episode and how you felt or what you thought about our discussion. We really want to hear from you. We would like to have even more voice feedback. So thank you as always so much for listening. We look forward to our next episode with lots more from you guys.
Thank you to our generous audio host, audioboom.com. Our audioboom channel is www.audioboom.com/channel/outlanderpod. Visit our website at www.outlanderpod.com. Follow us on Twitter at @outlanderpod. Find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/outlanderpod or email us at outlanderpod@gmail.com.